This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Jay Dyer's going to take over. I'm going to jam it a few more of your phone calls. And when we start the next segment, I'm going to introduce Jay Dyer. But I wanted to say something. I don't have pride in the fight against tyranny. That's the thing of how great I am. What I have is satisfaction. And I just talked to Warren Thornton, and I said, let me guess, you're feeling pretty satisfied right now, blowing that Nazi wide open. I said, yeah, that's the right word. I'm feeling satisfied. Like sucking air in your lungs, or you know, doing something that's right. It's all about satisfaction. It's about satisfaction, doing the right thing. All right, let's go to your phone calls. Let's go to Aaron in Colorado. Aaron, you're on the air. Go ahead.
It's an honor and a blessing to be on today, Alex. Thank you for having me on.
Love you, brother. Go ahead.
Well, what affected me is I served in the Army from 93 to 2003 with the reserve units. My dad worked for the studios, Warner Brothers, Universal. Couldn't wait to enlist. Get out of that house. I just got my degree in geology and archaeology in Alamosa, Colorado, Adams State University, home of Danny Pruitt. I remember when you covered him.
All right, go ahead.
And I've been in contact with him. I was in the Veterans Club representative at the Adams State and reached out to him just as you know, not for any hype, didn't record.
Sure, I don't remember. Who is he? What's going on?
He was shot in the back by a city attorney.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yes, sir. And the district attorney, Alonzo Payne, shortly having him on campus, finals week was underway. I was arrested on campus. Danny Pruitt was also charged. And this Alonzo Payne let people go, let murderers actually get off the hook, and then come after myself and Danny Pruitt.
Yeah, they let the leftist murderers and killers off. You were calling about military Red Dawn. That's what we're talking about.
Red Dawn. I love the Milius. I think Don Milius. Man, my dad worked on a miniseries called America with a K. It was a 13-part miniseries on ABC. I suggest everybody watch it. Independent film.
Yeah, that's with Chris Christopherson.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yep. Anything else?
No, I'm just glad you do what you do. I've been following you since the days of the app where it just had your audio on the app, on the Windows App Store.
I remember. They took that app away. Thank you, Aaron. Only way we get out now is you spread the links. Thank you so much. Up next here in the world of receive, Chris in New York. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. God bless. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Hey, so I was born in West Germany to two American soldiers during the fight for communism. I grew up and served our nation during OIF, the Global War on Terror. I knew before I went that it was an illegal war, thanks to all your hard work. While I was over there, I was a Black Hawk crew chief, and my company commander, with an order from George Bush, had us to fly the first Iraqi prime minister to some meetings. I believe the one where he got the shoes thrown at him and all that.
Yes.
Well, they wanted me to salute him, a foreign official, and I told him to go pound sand and get Bush down here, too, if he didn't like that answer.
Beautiful.
Obviously, as a member on the crew, I was met with some dropped jaws, and it didn't do my career any favors, but I needed to maintain my integrity.
Beautiful.
I want to let you know, too, that all of my family has served pretty much, and during 2020, some family members deployed to Washington, D.C. with the New York Army National Guard in support of, insurrection threats, and that was tipped off by FBI buddies. So everything that you've been saying is true. You know, these are false flags through and through. And, the little bit of advice that I got is that the state governors here in the United States need to remember that they're the commander-in-chief of their National Guard. And the National Guards were kept to oppose the federal army in times like this. So if our Republican governors don't shore up who they got and don't welcome our civilian patriots, so that way they're not led astray by, further undercover feds, we're not really going to have a chance at this thing. But I think if they show that they have a hand on their hard power, then that'll really put the politicians in line in D.C., and I think we could really turn the tables here. And, again, we got to start educating our brothers and sisters and hoping that Jesus Christ softens their hearts and shows them the truth. But, You know, we need to be prepared to back up the First Amendment with the Second.
No, you're right. Chris, amazing call. Sorry I'm out of time for QC, Luke, and Kelly. I'll call you back on Sunday for the show or Monday. But, Jada, we have not had this many of our best-selling products back in stock in years because of supply chain breakdowns and all the rest of the stuff that's gone on. And these are game-changing products. It's like our information's game-changing. These products are incredible. And I'm personally glad that these are now back in stock. All three of the InfoWars Platinum flagship products that have been sold out for months are now back in stock, but a very limited run because we only had a budget to get 3,000 or 4,000 bottles of each one of these. I think we got 4,000 bottles of the HGH Max Boost that people love so much. We've got about 4,000 bottles of 1776 Testosterone Boost that just came in. And we've got about 3,000 bottles of Pain MD, incredible natural pain reliever situation. All three of these are back in stock, and they're incredible, and they fund our operation at InfoWarsStore.com.
Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer, Jay's Analysis. Today we have with us one of my friends who've done some great interviews in the past, but we've not had Rachel Wilson on the fourth hour here to discuss her popular recent book, The Occult Roots of Feminism. And so if we have Rachel, I'd like to bring her up and maybe we could rewind kind of to the French Revolution because, you know, for me, it's a key era. I know, of course, witchcraft goes back way further than that, but I'm always touting and a big fan of this book, The History of Revolutionary Thought from that period, James H. Billington, Origins of the Revolutionary Faith, because guess what? He devoted a whole chapter to in his famous, it's not a conspiracy book, it's a famous scholarly history book from the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington. Chapter 17 is called The Role of Women, a giant chapter in the revolution, especially the French Revolution, devoted to this new idea at that time of feminism. So wait a minute. First of all, Rachel, let's talk about the connection between feminism to revolutionary philosophy with Mary Wollstonecraft and all that. And then we can get into this element that maybe most people would be really surprised by, which is the witchcraft side of it. What's the connection between witchcraft and feminism?
Yeah, so going back to the revolutionary period, this is really when we kind of deviate from ancient forms of thinking with metaphysics. And, you know, we had the church and we had the altar. And this is a brand new period where things like Marxism and collectivism are coming out as new ideas, and everybody's trying to throw off the yokes of authority, right? So it's kind of, feminism was really important to revolutionary thought because you can't kind of overturn the social order without including women's liberation in that. So like you mentioned, Mary Wollstonecraft was, strangely, you would think if women were so oppressed, it would be strange that this woman was traveling all over Europe with Thomas Paine and other French revolutionaries. She was having children out of wedlock. She was making a living on her own as a writer. And she wrote one of the first big treatises on women's liberation that made her kind of an instant celebrity overnight and got her in with these intellectual revolutionary circles. And something you'll notice over the course of what we're going to talk about today is that certain women were kind of plucked from obscurity and shoved to the forefront by people with lots of money. Because they felt like those people's ideas were helpful to the cause. And when you have a woman saying it, people are much less likely to, you know, behead her or things like that. So it was kind of expedient to put women at the forefront of some of the revolutionary ideas because they might get a little frowned upon or something like that, but it wasn't as likely that they would, you know, face like serious political repercussions. So
it's a good tactical ops and tactics move, right, in part. But also, as you said, it is itself a move against conservative traditional norms of boundaries and roles that men and women have. And so if you have a revolutionary philosophy, you want to disrupt the existing social order, what better way to do that than things like putting women in the men's role, putting women into the workforce, putting women into battle, all of which was actually beginning at this time period.
Yeah. People might be surprised to learn. We think that like the gender swapping or gender abolition ideas are new. A lot of people think that's from the last decade or two, but these are actually very old ideas that do go back to this period. You could arguably even say they go back to ancient times, but certainly during the revolutionary period in France, you had people like Simon Guinot and Mary Wollstonecraft and other gender-bending figures who wanted gender abolition. You know, we're talking the late 1700s, and this was always a part of feminism. Feminism always had elements of it that wanted gender abolition, and basically just to erase any sort of boundaries or differences among people. One of the people I wanted to mention today, too, is not just Mary Wollstonecraft, but Victoria Woodhull, who was an American women's lib person from the 19th century. And she gave a famous speech where she made appeals to religious liberty in the American Constitution, which was, you know, born out of this revolutionary period as well. And she insisted that the natural conclusion of the ideas in the Constitution and of this revolutionary period were going to be abolition of marriage. And even gender abolition, because she said these things were, you know, central to liberty, like this ultimate liberty for liberty's sake, right? We're going to just get rid of divisions between people, boundaries and differences that could cause conflict. And that's going to lead us to this new age, one world era of peace. So these are very old ideas that were baked into feminism right from the start.
So you couldn't have, as you pointed out, the present day, you know, trans movement, if you had not had bump it back three or four quote revolutionary movements to feminism. Feminism is what prepared the way for where we are now. And this is precisely why, for example, a lot of the mainline conservative movements will go after the biology attack, the trans agenda, but they won't talk about the prior revolution of feminism because too many so-called right wingers are themselves feminists.
Yes.
Now, there was a woman, there was a movement that I'm sure you know of called the Saint Simonians, and they followed this philosopher called Saint Simone, who was one of the philosophers of this period, and they eventually came out with this idea of the future female Messiah that would replace the Christian idea of Jesus as the Messiah or a male patriarchal deity. And so, you know, this happened in the 1800s in France. The Saint Simonians, under somebody called Father Enfantine, the Year of the Father, a large group of Saint Simonians in 1833 proclaimed it the Year of the Mother, the Year of the Goddess, and that there would be a Saint Peter of the Feminine Messiah who would come to usher in a new age of the rise of the feminine principle to overtake the patriarchal masculine. So now we're getting into religious territory and to cult territory. Were you familiar with that? Do you think that overlaps with the idea of witchcraft tying into this?
Yeah, absolutely. People might be really surprised to learn that in the 1840s alone, in America, there were over 80 experimental utopian cults that came out of this period with ideas about swapping gender roles, about a divine feminine. And some of these were even kind of like Protestant offshoot type of cults and communities that were experimenting with ideas of human liberation and these revolutionary ideas. And they kind of rejected the idea of God the Father as this, you know, because a lot of this was against the church as well, right? The revolutionary period was not just against monarchy. It was also against the power and authority of the church. The Roman Catholic Church in England especially, but all throughout Europe. So there was a lot of efforts to kind of bend and twist Christianity into something that it was unrecognizable to the previous centuries of Christianity, and also to kind of move Christians toward the occult. For example, you have the Saint Simonians, and then also here in the United States, you had Elizabeth Cady Stanton and 24 other feminists rewrite the first five books of the Bible. It was called the Woman's Bible, and it was one of the most popular books of its day. Now, it's not a Bible at all, so the name is a bit misleading. And what Stanton said her whole aim with rewriting the first five books of the Old Testament from this feminist perspective, she said, We would love to do away with Christianity and the Bible altogether if we could. She's often labeled as a Christian, but she said in the preface to her own book that she never believed that any man saw or spoke to God. She didn't believe that God gave us the Mosaic Law. She basically didn't believe Christianity at all, but she said, look, it's too influential. The Bible is so popular worldwide, and so many people believe it that we really can't get rid of it. What we have to do is revise it to the point that it's unrecognizable, because she firmly believed and said in the preface to the book, women's liberation will not be possible as long as Christianity is in our way. So you get a lot of these weird little cults experimenting with utopian Marxism and gender swapping and bringing this element of the divine feminine into Protestant Christianity on a big scale. And this is something that's never really talked about. And it happened both in America and in Europe around this time.
Yeah, the chapter on revolutionary feminist women in the Billington book has a section about the St. Simonians where it says, quote, their first goal was to build a new type of family, which was the prerequisite for a new type of society. Don't go anywhere. This is the Alex Jones Show with my guest, Rachel Wilson.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good, they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Some of your guests as Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We were just reading in the famous James H. Billington book the argument about how if we wanted to renovate and redo all of society, the area that we would start is the family. That's the Saint Simonian revolutionary technique and target that they had. And they knew that because they understood if they could destroy the family unit and make it something part of the collective and part of the state, then you could have a supposedly new type of society, because the family is the first, quote, fascist institution to a lot of the Marxist socialists. And so that's the first area that you would have to target and destroy. And then we were getting into this element of witchcraft and the occult. So I'd like to move to that next. And then maybe in the next segment, we'll get into some of the more recent cases of elite funding and establishment for radical feminist organizations and groups and publications and whatnot. But, you know, they're talking about a new female messiah. That seems to evoke the idea of the goddess. And in witchcraft, probably the most fundamental element there is the goddess. She's really the focus of that religion. And a lot of these groups seem to draw, even if they're not explicitly religious, a lot of the feminist and radical movements seem to draw from the occult and from witchcraft because of this preeminence of the feminine principle, the goddess. I've read medieval and late medieval and Elizabethan era witchcraft and Wicca and all that, where it arises from, European witchcraft. And the notion of the male principle being at war with the female principle and the witches choosing to sort of side with the feminine principle, that seems to be the logic of how it would be useful for feminist movements to pull from. How would you explain this to people? What is the connection between feminism and witchcraft?
Right. So the reason my book is called Occult Feminism, it's actually kind of a twofold meaning. One is that it's occult in the traditional sense of just meaning it's hidden. This history has been completely obscured and gatekept because women's studies programs starting in 1970, which were created by the Ford and Rockefeller Foundations and all the lovely folks associated with those entities, did not want relatively Christian America. We're talking 1970s suburban families, right, that they're trying to really promote feminism to at this time. They didn't want this history of it being bound up with things like theosophy and the occult to be well known, because Americans are going to reject that, right? Most of the normal family people are going to reject it. So most people don't know. Almost every suffragette you've heard of, almost every famous women's liberation activist from all the way from the beginning of the revolutionary period through when suffrage was passed, and even after that, they were spirit mediums, fortune tellers, tarot card readers. They practiced various forms of witchcraft, theosophy, or occult magic. The Golden Dawn had its own female priestesses who were suffragettes, who were out marching and doing terrorist acts in England and in the United States as well. So there's an old saying that there was hardly a suffragette that didn't sit at the seance table. This was certainly true. So if you are a feminist, right, it's kind of a chicken or the egg situation where it's like, are feminists drawn to the occult because it's a complete inversion of Christianity? Christianity being a patriarchal religion built on God the Father and a literal patriarchy. Therefore, all of this occult goddess worship stuff is very appealing. Or is it that goddess worship and the occult developed as like an antithetical religious system to something like Christianity? So either way, let's say you're a young woman who goes off to college and gets radicalized into like some of the really crazy feminist stuff. You're going to reject any Christian upbringing you had as oppressive. And so you still need some kind of spiritual dimension to your life, especially for women. The very first founder of the first American witch coven, Susanna Budapest, said this. She said, women need a spiritual dimension, and feminism is the political arm of witchcraft. That was a quote from her. She started the first American witch coven called the Susan B. Anthony Coven Number 1, and she was the first person in California to get witchcraft laws overturned in, I believe, the 1950s or 60s. So there's always been this link where if you're a rebellious woman, you don't want to be under church authority, or you want, you know, political liberation. These occult religions are very appealing. Even now, they're very appealing, even in modern times. In fact, various forms of witchcraft are the fastest growing religions in both England and America now. Things like Wicca, green witchcraft that's very like environmentally activist or it kind of all ties in, right? The socialism, the Marxism,
the veganism, the feminism.
Yeah. It's all kind of a rebellion against anything male, anything patriarchal, anything like God the Father or men, masculine principle. They do see, because you guys probably know this Marxist oppressed narrative, they see the history of men and women as being in opposition to one another. That's why if you go to Witch Talk, right? You go to Witch Talk, exactly. You're going to see lots of women who are really into Lilith worship it's kind of like a pick your own goddess buffet. Like Inanna is my favorite and I'm going to worship the divine feminine. So it's just very appealing if you have this feminist political ideology that's opposed to hierarchy, right?
Yeah, exactly. One question I have, which I'm sure a lot of, this is probably the most common rebuttal that you get. And it's, well, Rachel, but wait a minute. Weren't all of the women prior to this basically in a slave relationship? They were oppressed. Why would you be against freeing them up from the oppression that they were under? Is that even true?
Yeah. So a large part of my book is devoted to kind of debunking that myth. As we just explained, I mean, how were women traveling the world and being paid and promoted by the wealthiest elites to push feminism in the 18th and 19th century? If they were so oppressed, you would think that they would have suffered some kind of consequence, but that wasn't true. And this is another thing that most people don't know. Suffrage and women's liberation was extremely unpopular right up until the time that it passed, right, until suffrage passed in 1918 in the UK and then 1919 here in the US, they tried holding a couple of referendums to see if women wanted the vote. And the few women who bothered to show up, only 4% of them voted in favor of women's suffrage. And the suffragettes actually, after this, blocked any women's referendums on voting. So it's very ironic, right? The very women who are saying, give women the vote, give women the vote, are saying, but don't let them vote on whether they want the vote, because they'll say no. And you might think, oh, well, that's because they'd always been so oppressed that they didn't know, they were scared of life not being oppressed. They were afraid to be liberated or something along those lines. But that was actually not the reasoning they gave. And Susan B. Anthony herself said in her History of Woman Suffrage that the reason women didn't want suffrage is because they were very happy and enjoyed a lot of protections and provisions under male suffrage that they did not want to give up. And there was a vast amount of anti-suffrage organizations all through the 19th century and the early 20th century who had much bigger membership than pro-suffrage groups. They had very thoughtful people who would debate. They would put out pamphlets. They would put out, posters explaining the reasons they didn't want suffrage for women or this idea of women's liberation. And they knew, they could foresee that this was the purpose of this was to break down the family and to destroy the family.
Hold that thought. We got to go to a commercial break. This is the Alex Jones Show. We'll be right back.
Don't lie down and take it. Spread the word about this broadcast. Pray for this broadcast. Support other broadcasts, please. And please financially support us at InfoWarsStore.com. only way we operate is your funding. You are the InfoWar. You're the reason we're here. Please go to InfoWarsStore.com right now and empower yourself and your immune system and your body and your health and your vitality with a trifecta sale, 40% off, with DNA Force Plus finally back in stock, Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula finally back in stock, and Real Red Pill finally back in stock. It's been a year since all three have been back in stock together. There's no excuse not to get them. They're so amazing together. 40% off right now when you get all three together, or 25% off individually. The trifecta sale right now at InfoWarsStore.com. The only way we fail is you don't take action. This will enrich and empower your life, and it keeps us on the air. So if you want us to keep fighting in the face of these attacks, we can't do it without you. Plus, these are great products you need. That is a total win, a 360 win. The trifecta sale. Go now. InfoWarsStore.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with ExtendoVite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. ExtendoVite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and ExtendoVite is all natural. ExtendoVite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take ExtendoVite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go, and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. If you'd like to support my work, you can go to my website, jaysanalysis.com, and in the shop you can get access to all of my books over there, as well as my wife Jamie's books, Deconstructing Hollywood, philosophy books, etc. You want it, it's all there. All signed copies in the shop. Today my guest is Rachel Wilson. Her book is Occult Feminism, and we're talking about the roots and origin of the modern women's liberation movements and all the different phases and waves of feminism. And we were just talking about some of the objections that, well, but weren't women oppressed and weren't they basically slaves back then? Which isn't really the case. And What would you say to the objection, Rachel, when people say, well, but what about maybe a third wave feminism's bad, but like those older ones are all good? That's kind of the new so-called conservative talking point, is that third wave feminism, and you know, that's where it gets really bad. All the other ones are virtuous movements.
Yeah, well, part of this is a symptom of their literal rewriting of the history. There's a wonderful paper by Professor Joe C. Miller where he looked at the 13 mainline history textbooks used in universities to study the history of women's liberation from about 1900 on. And when he examined them, now he's a more of a progressive liberal professor himself, but he examined these and he said, okay, they've actually, as time gone on, written out large sections of the movement because they were not politically expedient and they did not help with the propaganda. So they didn't mention the fact that like theosophy and spiritualism, which were huge movements in England and America in the mid 19th century, were inextricably linked to first wave feminism. There's a book by author Joy Dixon. It's called The Divine Feminine, Theosophy and Feminism in England. And she says that theosophy was a major influence on suffragettes in both England and the United States. Helena Blavatsky worked closely with a lot of them. There was a really disproportionately high amount of membership in the Theosophical Society among suffrage activists. And as we already mentioned, a lot of them were anything from snake oil salesmen to faith healers to automatic writers. And some of this was a bit, some of this was a bit of a bid to be able to say things publicly that maybe they wouldn't be able to otherwise, but they also, did a lot of things like, readings for a lot of the wealthy elites of the time. And this was a way to get funding for suffrage. So, a really good example of this would be Victoria Woodhull, who I just mentioned gave this speech about gender and marriage abolition. She said she was contacted by the spirit of Demosthenes, the Greek orator, who told her to go to Manhattan and find Cornelius Vanderbilt and give him a reading. So she did just that, and they worked together. So that's where a lot of her funding came from. They actually ended up gaming the stock market together. They ripped off the stock market in the first Black Friday crash for $23 million. And the papers went to Vanderbilt and said, wow, how'd you, it was kind of like they were asking, were you doing some insider trading? They said, how could you know? Like, how'd you know this was going to happen? And you made all the right moves to make all this money. And he said, do as I do, consult the spirits, right? Well, it turns out that Woodhull had, a great friend, who, Josie Mansfield, who was kind of a madam, and she had a prostitution ring where she had spies that were connected to a lot of Vanderbilt's business rivals and a lot of wealthy stock market guys. And that's where she had gotten these tips from. So some of them were true believers. Some of them used it more as a front to conduct espionage and things like that.
Yeah, and I would say theosophy, really, in my view, is that as well. Theosophy functioned as a way to for the British power elite to have agents like Blavatsky, who was really, in my view, just an agent of the Milner Fabian elite. She was herself a Fabian socialist, and that was why she had so many contacts in the Soviet Union at that time amongst Bolsheviks, who were also many of them into theosophy. You mentioned this character that you were, this woman you're talking about. This is very closely parallels one of the other female messiahs of the mid 1800s. The figure, her name is Flora Tristan E. Moscoso. And, she left her husband and then went to London and became a radical socialist who tied the notion of women's rights to the workers' proletariat rights to, quote, prepare the world for a future utopian civilization. And it says after she visited the famous lunatic asylum of Bedlam, she came away with a sense of her messianic destiny. It was now her job as a feminine messiah to proclaim that all religions and everyone in the world, we are all one. So she has a new universalist monist religious calling to proclaim the future feminine dominated society. And I bring that up because she wrote a book where in the fiction story, the feminine messiah meets a billionaire banker and converts him, and they save the world together. So very, it's funny how the socialist Marxists are so adamant about trying to find the billionaires that they can convert to their cause, which really they should just look to the funders of their causes, because that's a good segue into what we wanted to talk about. In the Rockefellers, the authorized biography by Collier and Horowitz, there's an entire chapter on Cell 16 and the radical feminists of the third wave, and all of the money and support, quite a substantial amounts of money and support that they got from Abby Rockefeller, who herself was a radical feminist who hated femininity, hated her own gender, and decided that the way to achieve, again, this is a Rockefeller. This is not a college professor, Marxist, a street level agitator. This is somebody from the dynasty of the most wealthy people in the United States, or one of the most wealthy, powerful families in the United States, pushing Marxism, socialism. And it reminds me that when Alex Jones did the interview years ago with Aaron Russo, that clip is on my Twitter. It's got quite a few views. If you look at it, it's just a little brief clip where Aaron Russo talks about talking to Nick Rockefeller, another member of the family. And Nick Rockefeller told him that the job of that family in regard to women's rights was to push it to the degree to where it would be recognized throughout the country, so that women would get out of the house into the workplace. That's more taxation, and it cuts down on population, because now women will not be having children. They won't be moms. They're going to be in the workforce as a slave now to their new patriarchal master, Mr. Corporation.
Yes, exactly. There's one other really important figure we should mention in this section. Her name's Alva Vanderbilt Belmont. It's quite a mouthful, and yes, she has a couple of different last names. That's because her first husband was William K. Vanderbilt. He was the grandson of Cornelius Vanderbilt and one of the founders of the Jekyll Island Club, who was the same group, this group of six men that met at the Jekyll Island Club in 1910 to secretly draft the legislation that would create the Federal Reserve. That was her first husband. She married two elite bankers. He was the first. She was granted a divorce from him, one of the first wealthy women, you know, prominent, famous women to get a divorce. She got $320 million in today's money from that divorce, and had been having an affair with William Vanderbilt's best friend, Oliver Hazard Perry Belmont, from the Belmont banking family, which were the primary agents of the Rothschild interests in America at this time. So she got this, like, double inheritance. Oliver died soon after they got married, so she was one of the wealthiest women in the world, and had all these elite connections. And she decided to fund, basically, almost all on her own, the National Organization for Women's Suffrage in America. She, both in England and the United States, she would bail out terrorist suffragettes who would do bombings or arson fires or even assassination attempts in order to, you know, push suffrage. She bought many of their headquarters. She funded most of the conferences. Without that money, I'm not sure that we'd see women's liberation as it's happened today. And then the other big one would be Phoebe Hearst. She is from the Hearst, you know, media empire. She was the mother of William Randolph Hearst. And she was a member of the Baha'i faith. If you guys don't know what that is, probably one of the first big globalist. It was particularly a globalist faith. It's still around today, but not as popular. It called for a global New World Order government, a one world religion, a one world language.
Now hold that thought. We got to go to a break. Yeah. Hold that thought. We got to go to a commercial break. This is the Alex Jones Show with Rachel Wilson. I'm your guest host.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com. And an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past few years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage is only $75 per month, level for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco user can buy $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110. Guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rates for 20 years. And if you're a smoker, we have great rates for you as well. At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. So if you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call right now for a free quote.
Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes are based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting exam required to qualify.
800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. 800-430-1891. That's 800-430-1891.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Welcome back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. We're talking about the history of occult feminism, the secret history of women's liberation by Rachel Wilson. Another thing that we were getting into the reminds me of establishment push and funding for this is not just, well, the elite love socialism, they love leftism, the billionaires push this because it's great for collectivization of wealth and then transferring that wealth offshore. Another reason they like it is because it's a better way to create a malleable and controllable population when the super state, the corporate state, becomes the mommy and the daddy figure at the same time. So it's not just big brother, it's also nanny state, it's mommy daddy state. Both can be, the role can be fulfilled by the super corporate state. That's what they would like to have in their technocratic agenda. And there's many examples that we can find of the intelligence agencies, NGOs, and think tanks, deep state, shadowy private groups that have actually put extensive amounts of funding into these kinds of things. One of the, we mentioned Abby Rockefeller's support for third wave feminism, which was quite a substantial amount of money to get that going. And that was done in part through Cell 16 and Chicago University, which was itself a Rockefeller-founded university. But there's also the history of Gloria Steinem, the famous activist feminist, who, when she worked with Miss Magazine, it was later revealed that Miss Magazine received a lot of CIA funding, and she openly admitted that, yes, she was actually part of working with the CIA. And that, in fact, the CIA was not a conservative organization. It was an anti-Soviet organization during the Cold War. That does not make it a conservative or a right-wing organization, per se. In fact, the that organization, as well as many intelligence agencies and deep state entities, have typically been more favorable towards liberal approaches, socialist, Fabian socialist approaches. So we have to be careful how we understand these entities and organizations. Rachel, what do you think about that story of Gloria Steinem admitting that she was a very close collaborator with the CIA during that 60s counterculture period to push liberation as supposedly a, which I think is a false dialectical opposition to Sovietism?
Yeah, definitely. So again, we'll see that Gloria Steinem's grandmother and mother both were theosophists. A lot of people don't know this. She wrote a column about it a couple decades ago, I think. I found this really obscure column that she had published it's really hard to find now, but I do mention it in my book. So she does have this background of theosophy going on in the family, and she goes to like the preeminent women's college, Smith College, and gets recruited pretty much right out of Smith College by the CIA to travel the world and through the Congress for Cultural Freedom push feminism as like this dialectical opposition to communism, which is very ironic because if you go back to the Bolshevik government, under Lenin had one of the first female cabinet ministers of all time. Her name was Alexandra Kollontai. We have tons of her writings now, now that we've got more documentation from this time period, where she explicitly talks about how we need to break up the family. The family has got to go because this is how men establish, you know, a legacy, how they earn private property, the motivation for them wanting to start a business or own anything is the family. So we have to get rid of that and do away with it so that there's no longer any motivation for men to do this and everything can be done through the state. And she was perfectly willing to work with a lot of liberal feminists of the time, even though you would think the Marxist feminists and the liberal feminists were opposed. In theory, they were, but in practicality, they often worked together. They wrote letters back and forth explaining to each other how they're getting their agendas passed. So there's really not this like opposition to a lot of the goals of capitalism and Marxism that people think there were. And feminism is one of the great historical pieces we can look to see this synthesis happening, right?
Well, now, wait a minute, though. Why would capitalists want to fund something like feminism? Isn't that more of a socialist thing? And now you're saying that why would capitalists like feminism? Now, again, it calls to mind what we just mentioned with Aaron Russo and Nick Rockefeller, right, and his comments about getting them out of the household. But doesn't this then contribute to overall depopulation in your view?
Yes. Feminism is also historically linked to both eugenics and depopulation with people like Margaret Sanger. But it's not coincidental that feminism did not become this like dominating political force until after the Industrial Revolution, the passage of the income tax, the passage of the Federal Reserve Act. So getting women out of the family, where, you know, both capitalists and Marxists lamented that women's labor was not being taxed, women's labor was not accessible to them. They couldn't monetize it for the corporate system. And they could foresee that getting women out of the home and into the factories would allow them much higher income tax base, cheaper labor. It would also allow access to the children because the children have to go somewhere during the day if both parents work. So then you see state daycares in early Soviet Russia. They were called creches. They became indoctrination centers. And we had our own liberal version here in the West of pushing kids into state-owned daycare and public school systems, which also began to crop up around the same time period. So these things are all working together for the same goals of, and we see birth rates drop off, right? We see birth control. So they've really, through feminism, achieved a lot of their goals, probably more than any singular revolution, I would say.
Yeah, I remember the name of the off the book escapes me. You would probably remember it. The Collins brothers wrote an article about this too, where some of the leading academic feminist writers today that in the academic world, there's a book about the Luciferian connection and feminism as a form of goddess Luciferian worship. And there's also statements, I think, from those authors saying that we would need to kill God the Father in order to bring about the full liberation. Do you know which book I'm talking about? I always forget the name.
I think you're talking about Satanic Feminism by Per Faxneld. He's a professor in Sweden who wrote this. His PhD thesis was about how women of the suffrage era openly declared Luciferianism to be their founding guiding principle. It's always been an opposition to God the Father and to fatherhood and to paternity and to patriarchy.
Well, and there's something about women have a lot of great things that they're good at, you know, when it comes to nurturing and raising children and all the things that guys can't do. Guys don't have that. I mean, if there's a emergency situation where somebody dies, then the guy has to fill that role. Yeah. And vice versa, the woman has to fill the role if a man leaves or something like that. But we're not actually fitted to do the exact same things. We have different skill sets and different abilities. So that's just part of the natural order. So it seems to me that all of this is really a rebellion against nature itself and the natural order. And by that, I mean the natural order that God created. I don't mean natural order in some, you know, enlightenment naturalist sense, in a materialist sense. I mean natural law in the sense of Romans 1 and so forth, right, that we're made clearly with a purpose, and that's even stamped into our bodies, into our biology. And all of this seems to be actually motivated by a kind of demonic rebellion against even that, against nature itself. The idea that, so it's not actually, what I'm getting at is that feminism and all this is not actually an exaltation of women. It's actually an attack on women.
Yes, exactly. I would agree with you on that. And Kollontai wrote herself that once we get the social order inverted, once this social question is solved, our next and final frontier is to conquer nature itself. And this is why you see this rebellion against the natural order, against it's almost Gnostic. Yes, she explicitly says that.
That's a neo-Gnostic, it's a neo-Gnostic revolution of process. That's actually what dialectical materialism of Marxism is, a neo-Gnostic dialectical process, philosophy, mystical mystery religion.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how she described it. I was just going to say this is very tied in with like a new form of Gnosticism as well. This idea that nature is bad. God the Father is the evil demigod who created us in this restrictive order that we have to invert and overcome. Yeah.
The process, by the way, of conflict, they believe, is itself the end goal. The conflict and chaos never goes away. And so it's in the pre-Socratic philosophy, this is called Heraclitianism, which is the idea that all reality is constantly changing and in flux. And so that actually is itself the mystical process that brings about apotheosis. But it's not really apotheosis. It's actually a self-destructive negation. It's actually an act against nature and existence. So, Rachel, thank you so much. The book is Occult Feminism. And do you want to give us your links?
Yes, if you want to follow me on Twitter/X, I'm @Rach4Patriarchy. You can.
Former CIA officer and survival expert Jason Hansen here. I teach people how to prepare for the unexpected. Right now, most Americans are not ready for the death of the U.S. dollar. You have money sitting in cash, and if you don't act soon, your financial future could be at risk. I have partnered with Advantage Gold, the number one rated precious metals company in America, to release my new digital dollar survival kit that's 100% free for everyone who calls today and claims your free survival kit. Simply call 800-900-8000 and give your email address, and I will have this new digital dollar survival kit sent to you immediately. Call 1-800-900-8000 now and claim your free kit, and also mention my name, Jason Hansen, and see how you could also qualify for $1,000 in free silver. Supplies are limited, so call right now before it's too late. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.